Chapter 17. Japan. Arriving in the airport in Tokyo, I remember standing in line at the customs. There weren't many people there, and I thought there was a strange, quiet atmosphere. No one was talking. I admit, I was a bit nervous when I stood there with passport in my hand, stamp-filled, curled in the corners, and with bits of glue from baggage tag stickers on the back, waiting to enter a country that has just been hit by a record-sized tsunami, earthquake, and nuclear catastrophe. Had I made the right decision? Was this stupid? Was I being exposed to radiation already? There was no way around it. I had made the decision to go there, and now I had to go through with it. First task was to find out how to meet up with Ryan. My phone didn't work on the Japanese network, so I couldn't get in touch with him. I didn't know which bus I should take, and I had no chance with a train map where station names were written in Japanese only. I was stuck. I didn't know what to do in order to get to Ryan. Signs were in Japanese, and no one I asked spoke English. For about 15 minutes, I just sat there on a bench and felt really lost. It was a challenge, and I had to get myself together and face it. I found myself a small shop where they rented out SIM cards. I had no idea why they just didn't sell them like everywhere else. With a working phone, I got a hold of Ryan and got the details for which bus I should take to get to the town to meet him. I had shipped my winter jacket home in India, forgotten my old shoes in Manila, and Jonathan was holding on to my hoodie until I got to Los Angeles. I didn't expect to need any of it for the rest of my trip, since I would be traveling to nice and warm places. I was wrong. Tokyo was freezing in the evening, and I only had sandals, shorts, and t-shirts. I had thrown out my few socks somewhere between Singapore and Boracay, since they just took up room in my bag. I texted Ryan and asked him to bring me some warm clothes while I was freezing my ass off at the bus stop. I was really happy to see him again, not only because he was a good friend that I hadn't seen for many years, but even more because he had brought me socks and a nice warm sweatshirt. Now that I had gotten warmer, I was excited to experience Japan and see what was waiting for me there. It was the birthplace of jiu-jitsu, so it was also, in a way, special for me to go there for training. We could make it just in time for some sparring if we went straight to the gym, Ryan said. He had always been one of my favorite sparring partners every year when I had gone to New York. I couldn't wait to get back on the mat with him. The streets of Tokyo were colorful and bright, lit up by thousands of streetlights. Most of the lights had been switched off due to the catastrophe at the nuclear power plant, so it was darker, apparently, than normal. I had almost already forgotten that I had landed in a nation in the middle of an enormous crisis. Everything looked normal. No one was panicking, people strolled down the streets like anywhere else in the world, and life went on. The city showed no signs of damage, not even a small crack in the streets. It was clearly a different picture than the one the media had painted. There was a certain feeling to the streets. They were peaceful, a strange contrast to the situation of chaos the country was in. Up north, things were very much different though. The tsunami had destroyed vast areas, and radiation threatened both people and nature. I could see in Ryan's eyes that he was affected by the situation when he told me about it. Him and everyone else in the big city had held their breaths for the 6 minutes the most powerful earthquake to have ever hit the country had lasted. Now they only had small, daily aftershocks that could barely be felt. We took the elevator a few floors up to a Gold's Gym that was housing AACC. It was a big place with impressive facilities. In one side of the room stood a boxing ring, and in the other was a really big wrestling mat. We arrived late in the middle of the class. About 30 guys and girls were on the mats rolling. I recognized a few of the women from MMA, but didn't know anyone else. Ryan introduced me to the trainer, a short Japanese guy somewhere in his 40s called Abe-san. He spoke little English, but welcomed me and straight away invited me to stay with him in his apartment near the gym. I had only just arrived from the airport, and already I had two options of where to stay. Ryan had offered for me to sleep on the floor of his place. Since he was moving to another apartment a few days later, Abe-san's offer was a perfect opportunity for me to stay somewhere else in the meantime. I didn't know him at all, but I gratefully accepted his offer. We changed and jumped on the mat for 30 minutes of rolling before the class ended. It was mainly bluebells there, and I was much bigger than most of them, but they were very crafty with their guards. After the last round, everyone sat around in a circle. "Thank you very much, Christian, for coming to Japan in this difficult time," Abe-san said, then asked me to introduce myself to the class. I told him a bit about my trip, while another European guy, who was apparently learning Japanese, tried to translate for everyone. I would be spending the first few nights at Ryan's place. He had a room in a big house for foreigners, who the Japanese called Gaijin. He had Japanese parents and spoke the language, but since he had grown up in New York, he would always be seen by the Japanese as a foreigner. His room was tiny, barely fitting a mattress and his clothes. I liked the feeling of the house. For some reason, I found the sliding doors to be super awesome and really authentic Japanese. It was mostly young people living there who were in Tokyo for studies or work. I slept directly on the floor. We didn't have a mattress, so I took out some of my clothes to lie on. Although the hard surface hurt a bit, I didn't mind. It was a part of the experience of my trip to sleep in all sorts of places. Ryan was off work in the morning, and I had arranged to meet with Aaron in the afternoon. He was an American guy living in Tokyo who was training with Yuki Nakai and had been following my blog. I was scouting for a non-Asian looking person at the subway station as I saw him waving to me from the other side of the street. We decided to take a cab to town and spend a few hours there before going to the gym. The doors of the cars opened automatically, freaking me out with this futuristic technology. I was intrigued by the whole earthquake thing and interested in hearing people tell me about their experience with it. Aaron was finishing his burger and told me about the day it happened. He had been training when the big one hit. The gym was in a basement, and in fear of the building collapsing on top of their heads, everyone had run out on the street surfing the moving asphalt for 6 minutes with their gis on. While the big one had sounded pretty scary, I was still curious to experience one myself. Para Extra would probably have been impossible to find if I wasn't going there with Aaron, who knew where it was. There were no signs, only a business card-sized sticker on a mailbox outside a door that looked like any other apartment front door in the area. Going down the stairs to the basement, a small wooden shoe rack and a classic gym odor confirmed that it was the right place. The gym was a total mess. The air was thick with history and sweat. The walls were covered in old newspaper clips and photos from years and years back. Yuki Nakai himself was the only person in the room. He was sitting on the mat by the wall and reading some papers. He had become world famous back in the mid-90s when he participated in a Valley Judo tournament. Being the world judo champion at the time, he was confident in his skills. In one of the first rounds, he got eye-poked and was permanently blinded in one eye. Despite that, he kept fighting and eventually went on to meet none other than Hickson Gracie. Weighing in at only 70 kilos, he was considerably smaller than Hickson and lost due to a rear naked choke. The tournament was documented in the movie Choke, and Yuki's fighting spirit and courage captured everyone's hearts. I had seen the movie when I started training more than 10 years earlier. It was one of the first things I ever saw about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and it made the choice easy for me. That was the art I was going to learn. Now I was in Yuki's own little gym in Tokyo. He greeted us and welcomed me to his gym. No, friends no pay for training here, he said to me as he patted me on the shoulder. He had an elbow injury and couldn't train much himself. His belt was old and so worn out it looked like it could fall apart at any given moment. He cracked his fingers and his neck. A lifetime of fighting had taken its toll on his body. He was teaching a 1-hour technique class from 7 till 8, but only I, Aaron, and one other guy had showed up. We were basically having a private lesson with a legend of the sport, and I was eager to get as much information out of him as possible. He showed us a sneaky way to escape the lockdown half guard that I have used with success ever since. His understanding of technique and body mechanics was impressive. After the technique class, there was open mat from 8 till midnight, 4 hours of rolling where people dropped in whenever they had time. Everyone was working a lot, so it wasn't unusual that someone would come in at 11 and roll for an hour before heading home. There were lots of high-level guys on the mat, and I counted at least 8 black belts and 6 brown belts during the evening. They were good, and I had my hands full with all of them. I spent the whole training practicing my defense. They all had strong guards, and for hours I tried to figure out how to defend their sweeps and submissions from there. It was funny, since the guard was supposed to be the one position that set Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu apart from the Japanese. My cardio felt great, and I felt confident with every opponent I had. The young bluebells tried to kill me. I much preferred rolling with the higher level guys who would turn it into a graceful chess match instead of a fight for our lives. One of the black belts was a really big Japanese guy. He had a good 10 kilos on me and I was seriously struggling with him. At one point, I set up a single leg from the guard and waited for the right moment to stand up with it. My opponent was standing over me with a solid grip on the back of my gi, waiting for me to make my move. I didn't get to stand on my feet for more than a split second before I flew through the air in some crazy judo throw. As I came around and realized what had happened, I quickly decided to just stay on my butt for the rest of the roll. The atmosphere was really relaxed. People were sitting around on the mat and talking when they weren't rolling. From home, I had always imagined training in Japan to be strict and run with military discipline. Maybe that was the case in other gyms there, but in the ones I had visited so far, it had been the most relaxing training discipline I had found anywhere in the world. Yuki said my jiu-jitsu looked good after having watched me roll. I wasn't usually a sucker for compliments, but with him, I was a bit of a fanboy. Sitting in the metro back to Ryan's place, I felt overly happy. The training had been great, and I had loved to have such a long open mat session where people were just hanging out and rolling. I would definitely have to implement trainings like that in my own schedule at home. It had gotten late as I caught one of the last trains of the day. Most of the people on board were businessmen in suits on their way home from a long day at the office. One guy had fallen asleep and dropped his head on the shoulder of the person next to him while occasionally talking in his sleep. It didn't look like they knew each other, but the guy who was awake didn't mind and kept playing some game on his phone. Most of the people looked drunk, even though it was a regular weekday evening. Ryan had told me that it was common practice to work late and then get hammered with all your colleagues and only sleep for a few hours before going to work again the next morning. This would go on every single day of the week, rendering a scarily large amount of the population alcoholics. My body was exhausted from training when I stood on the escalator going up from the subway station. The last train of the night rumbled beneath my feet as it left the station. It was a quiet evening, and I really enjoyed walking through the streets to the Gaijin house in the light rain. I just hoped it wasn't radioactive. That would kind of kill the good mood a little bit. Ryan and some of the other guys sitting in the shared kitchen immediately asked me as I entered the door if I'd felt the earthquake. I was confused. I hadn't felt anything. Apparently, there had been a pretty big one 15 minutes earlier. Then I remembered the feeling of the train rumbling in the station when I stood on the escalator. It hadn't been the train. I had no idea that it was an earthquake, and I was disappointed that I'd missed it. Had it hit a few seconds earlier or later, I wouldn't have been on that escalator and would definitely have felt it. I really hoped there would be another one before I left for the next destination. It was nice to finally have time to sit down and talk to Ryan. When we had met in the gym in New York many years before, I had immediately felt a connection with him. We shared many drunken conversations in the local bar there about what we wanted to do with our lives. Ryan talked a lot about how he didn't feel like busy 30 New York was the right place for him to live his life. Eventually, one day, he sent me an email telling me he was moving to Japan. I was excited for him and proud that he had the courage to make that big decision. It was like when someone you have trained with for a long time finally gets the next belt. Back on the wooden floor, I was going through some emails. I still hadn't decided where to go next, but I had to head towards the US since I was meeting up with my girlfriend in New York less than 2 weeks later. Hawaii was right on the way, and I was eagerly looking for an affordable ticket to go there. Robert from Romania had invited me to come for a camping trip with him and his family in Virginia. It seemed very far away, lying on the floor in the little room in Japan, but I had to start thinking about my plans for that area already. It was hard to decide what route I should head for after New York. I had set my mind on participating in the World Championships in California, but on the other hand, I felt more drawn towards South America than going across the US. An old friend from the martial arts community in Denmark, Martin, who was now living in Las Vegas and fighting in the UFC, had written to me on Facebook. "Hey dude, was just checking out the BJJ Globetrotter blog. It looks like it's a really cool trip you're on. I hope you're experiencing a lot. The seminar I did in your gym went well. You have done a great job with that place. It looks really nice and great to see so many members there. Let me know if you're coming by Vegas on your trip. I have a guest room in my house you can stay in if you want." If I made it to Los Angeles for the competition, I would have to drop by Vegas as well. I still had to figure that out. Sleeping directly on the floor was confusing my brain. During the night, I would often wake up and wonder where I was, since I wasn't in a bed. At one point, I woke up and it was still pitch black. I didn't know if I had turned around or something and used my hand to feel where I was. I was afraid that maybe I had rolled across the floor and was lying next to Ryan. Over my head, I could feel something that immediately gave me the chills. I couldn't tell if it was an animal or a human, but it was definitely something biological. I worried if it was a big dead rat, but it could also just be Ryan. It was too dark to see what it was, and I couldn't find my phone for light. I was really afraid, and my adrenaline started pumping. I tried to poke it gently. If it was Ryan, I didn't want to wake him up, but on the other hand, I needed to find out what it was. I was not going to sleep with that right above my head if it was a dead rat. I had to find out what it was. Scared as shit, I gathered the courage to grab it and pulled it down in front of my face to take a look. I was shocked when I saw it was a human hand. I was just about to scream when I found out it was my own, the left one. My arm had gotten completely numb from the hot floor, and in my fear and sleepy confusion, I had totally forgotten to check if both my arms were functioning properly. It took a while before the effect of the adrenaline faded and I could sleep again. The shower spoke to me in the morning, and the trains played happy, happy music when the doors closed. Bird sounds on the station signaled to blind people where the stairs were. No stressful beeping sounds like I was used to at home. I loved it. I was moving to Abe-san's place and was meeting him at the train station. There was a little park nearby where I sat down in the sun and waited for him. An old bald guy with big eyebrows, white as snow, walked by. A woman who had spotted my Pray for Japan t-shirt came up to me and had to concentrate on using every single word in her English vocabulary to thank me for coming to Japan despite the disaster. I was seriously intrigued by Tokyo. There was something very, very different about it. It was like being in a parallel reality where society's rules, values, and people were so different from what I was used to. I like different places. I guess that must be quite obvious since I can't keep my ass at home and have to go travel all the time. Japan appealed to me in a way that made me think a lot. Could I see myself living there in the future? It was safe, clean, and everyone was nice to each other, at least as far as I could see. The culture was interesting and the attention to detail amazed me. Abe-san had a nice apartment right next to his gym. He had a washing machine that could talk and a dog called Lo, named after his favorite technique, the low kick. I got my own room with a nice mattress on the floor. No more nightmares about dead rats. He had two backstage passes to a deep show the same evening and asked me if I wanted to join him. There was no way I was going to turn down that offer. It was a small venue, but a fair amount of people had turned up. MMA was not the same in Japan anymore. Since the UFC bought Pride, the popularity had fallen drastically and the shows were much smaller than back in the glory days. I was introduced to lots of people and taken for a tour of the basement where the fighters were warming up. Everyone was bowing to each other, and I had a really hard time figuring out what I should do when I met someone. There was a lot of etiquette for me to learn. A narrow corridor led to the small locker rooms. The place was packed with people, all wearing t-shirts with some sort of fight logos. A guy was sitting on a bench in one of the little rooms with no shirt on, wrapping up his hands. He had a cut over his eyebrow and big cauliflower ears. He looked sweaty and focused. Next to him, a pretty girl with a Japanese mandatory miniskirt and crazy hairstyle sat texting on her phone. She was biting her lip and looked even more nervous. In the corner stood a small, old TV showing a direct feed from the empty boxing ring. Another guy sat on a chair with his elbows on his knees and his head between his legs, face buried in his palms. Abe-san was helping a guy with his hand wraps. The air was thick with adrenaline. Everyone waited for the show to begin, for the bell to ring. I found a seat in the hall right next to where the fighters walked in. The guy with the girlfriend was first up. She was shaking as she stood by the entrance and looked at him. The music started playing. He was focused. The palms of her hands were pressed together as if she was praying for him. A tear ran down her chin and she bowed to him as he started walking towards the ring. Observing her reactions was almost as exciting as watching the fight itself. In the first round, it looked like she kept her breath for 5 minutes as her boyfriend almost got knocked out. The second round, he came back and won by a rear naked choke. It was all over and the relief on her face was immense. The rest of the show had many good matches. Every one of the fighters acted with class. It was a breath of fresh air to see how these athletes behaved in the ring compared to the in-your-face attitude one would usually see in the American MMA shows. One guy got knocked out and bowed to the audience when he finally got on his feet, receiving a big applause. I wondered what would happen if a big earthquake hit during a show like that. Once, when we had an evening of amateur MMA matches in my gym at home, some guy in the audience accidentally leaned onto the light switch so the room turned completely dark. It was in the middle of the match, and with all the adrenaline pumping, both fighters thought they'd been hit really hard since they couldn't see anything. In the dark, we could hear them go all out, manically trying to knock each other out, while everyone else laughed simultaneously and scrambled towards the door to try and find the light switch. Abe-san told me that his own student was putting the gloves on the shelf and had asked to fight him for his retirement fight. It was apparently an honorable thing to fight your own teacher in your last match, and he was all set for a show a few months later. Pretty awesome. I had looked into visiting other gyms around Tokyo, but it was hard to get in touch with people there, and they were all really expensive. Since Japan was already an expensive place to spend my time, I thought that sticking to my offer of free training in AACC and Paraestra wasn't a bad idea. Sakuraba had a gym just around the corner from Abe-san's apartment that I went to run night. Unfortunately, the mat fee was way over my budget. They offered me a discount, but then I was not allowed to do any sparring with them, just participate in the technique part. Sakuraba wasn't there himself either, and I respectfully declined. I went to a lot of classes in the two gyms and got tons out of it. No matter what time of day I showed up, there would always be super high level guys to roll with. The Noki classes were good. People were focused and worked hard. It was obvious that they were there to improve. There wasn't much socializing though. Maybe it was just because of the language barrier. Only a few people spoke English and not very well. Megumi Fuji, a famous female MMA fighter, was super friendly and very interested in practicing her language. As we sat on the mat after training and talked, she suddenly stopped me in the middle of a sentence, putting a finger to her lips and sitting all still. There was another small earthquake, but once again, I didn't feel anything. In fact, people had been telling me about little ones every day, but I couldn't feel a thing. I just wasn't aware of it, so my brain ignored them, thinking it was just my stomach rumbling or a subway train beneath the street. I was leaving the next day and felt cheated that I hadn't felt one. She laughed. So much for the dangers of nature that almost kept me from going to Japan in the first place. The shower facilities in AACC were pure luxury, and never knowing when I would have the chance for a real cleaning on the trip, I spent a lot of time in the spa and sauna there every day. Most gyms I had been to didn't even have a shower, so it was a relief to suddenly have facilities like this. The Japanese guys really liked to shower, and like me, spent a lot of time there after training. The locker room had an area with mirrors where people could sit and dry their hair, clean their ears, and so on. One day, when I got out of the shower, a guy was standing completely still in front of the mirror, looking himself straight in the eyes while drying his bushy to the extreme, I must add, genitals with the hairdryer on full speed. I had seen so much weird stuff in Japan that nothing could really surprise me anymore. Abe-san took me out to eat every day all around town. I ended up staying with him for almost a week and he became a special friend to me. He was one of these Japanese fighters who had fought as an underdog countless times. He had lost most of his fights, but everyone I met had immense respect for him. It was clear to me that this was not only for his courage in the ring. He was a black belt in BJJ, master wrestling coach, legend of catch wrestling, and an experienced kickboxer and MMA fighter. What really stood out though when I got to know him better was his personality, philosophy, and view on life and fighting. If there was such a thing as a true master of MMA, he would be it. I had decided to go to Hawaii on my way to New York. I wanted to stay for a while in both Japan and Hawaii, so there would be no time to stop on the US West Coast. I would have to try and somehow get there after New York. The tickets were really expensive since I would be leaving right in the middle of a Japanese holiday. The Japanese apparently love going to Hawaii, so all the tickets were sold out, and I ended up paying more than $1,000 for a one-way flight with a stopover in Korea. It was a rare chance for me to go there, so I took the chance and really hoped it would be worth it. I would try and save some money somewhere else on the trip to make up for it.